Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Hello, I'm Andrew Hill from the Financial Times, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to the 2018 edition of our masterclass on how to bring a business book from proposal to publication. The occasion is the award of the FT and McKinsey Brackenbauer Prize to the best business book proposal by an author aged under 35. The prize this year has gone to Andrew Leon Hanna for his proposal 25 Million Sparks, and we're joined by him and his fellow finalists Christian Busch, whose book proposal is entitled The Serendipity Factor, and Pyumi Kapugikiana, who wrote 1 Billion in Reserve. We'll be hearing a little from them later. First, I want to introduce our panel. Georgina Laycock is non-fiction publisher at John Murray Publishers. Joel Rickett is deputy publisher Ebury, part of Penguin Random House, and managing director-elect of Ebury, and a judge of the Brackenbauer Prize. And Jonathan Conway has his own literary agency, Jonathan Conway Literary Agency, specialising in all forms of non-fiction. So let me start, Georgina, with you, if I may. What are you looking for in a business book proposal?
I guess it's something that makes me look at things differently. So I feel the best books kind of cast a bit of a spell on you, but they make you look at the world and then understand that you've kind of taken things for granted that you shouldn't have done.
And do you have an example of something that has turned into a wonderful book from a book proposal that crossed your desk?
Well, there was a book that I published a couple of years back called Work Rules, which was written by Laszlo Bock, who was the head of human resources at Google. And I think they call it people operations because that sort of sounds a bit more human. But he wrote a really interesting proposal, and I could see that there were the germs of something really interesting in that. And then it was sort of like working with him so that he broadened it out beyond Google, and then that sort of like rules for how other companies could take the things that work for them.
But I suppose one question from that would be the fact that he was Laszlo Bock, head of people at Google, was a pretty big calling card.
It was a big calling card. So it was kind of one of those things of almost like helping him break free of being Laszlo Bock and do something that actually worked universally. So I think people would be more interested in hearing what he had to say, but then he was more interested in the people outside Google.
Right. Jonathan, you obviously get to see some of these proposals at perhaps an earlier stage. Is that something you work on with business book writers or non-fiction writers?
Absolutely. It's an essential part of the job to be able to see something in a proposal that could be made bigger and more relevant to publishers. So I really kind of enjoy when you have something there, the author has a talent and there's an integrity to the proposal, but then that's really the start point. You have to work creatively with a writer to develop that proposal in a way that will appeal to publishers. It's pretty rare that something arrives fully formed. So rare as to say, I don't think that's ever happened in my experience. So it's a creative process. The author's in control of that, but you're helping guide them, hopefully, in the right direction.
So, Joel, to come to you, and perhaps just to explain that the Brackenbauer Prize, which has been running since 2015, we ask for a 5,000-word essay, if you like, laying out both the theme of the book, the style in which it's going to be written, and giving a structure of what the book might look like. Is this typically more or less than you would expect from a book proposal when it comes to you? Because I know previous winners have talked about how they've had to rework their Brackenbauer proposals into something more detailed in order to put it forward to publishers.
I think a lot of the books we actually acquire are probably around you know, the prose was around 5,000-6,000 words. I mean, sometimes you get the whole book, so it can really, there's a huge range. Sometimes people write the whole thing. I wouldn't encourage that necessarily, certainly in the world of business books, because you want to seed the idea first and also get the input from the agent and then hopefully the editor as to what the book should be. And most of the proposals that we looked through were which was a kind of long list, were really strong and had all of or most of the components that you'd expect to have. Perhaps the part that was lacking and that might come with further development from someone inside the industry would be the elements around how to position the book, where it sits in the market against other books on a similar subject or by similar kinds of authors, the plans for how basically how the book's going to get into the world and get into people's hands, and from that I mean from the author's side, so you know, who will they be able to reach, talk to about the book, who will they be able to influence, how, what kind of publicity would they be able to generate, and what their own network or platform is like. And that kind of bleeds into the other thing that was inconsistent was information about, yeah, the author themselves, what their experience is and how that relates to the subject of the book, which is, you know, in business books, really critical. Because it's not like, you know, some other areas of publishing, maybe literary fiction, where, you know, someone can have an enormous leap of imagination and write about something completely different from their own experience. Of course, they can do that in business books, and there are some outlier incidents of books becoming successful where the author had no experience, but it's very, very rare. Usually, these kind of books relate really closely to the author's work, their experience, their expertise, and the world that they're in. And I think that's the case for all three of the finalists.
And I mean,
this
is
year.
There, to go to the point I was raising with Georgina, is there a less of a chance for an unknown author to therefore break through into business books than perhaps there might be in fiction, albeit fiction is highly competitive as well?
That's equally very difficult as well, and I think the author story is often part of the fiction you know, acquisition and process as well, but yes, it is harder definitely for someone to stretch themselves completely out of the zone that they might know and have experience of, not just in terms of the research and the kind of inside value that they're bringing to the book, but in terms, as I say, of how they're going to find an audience for it, how they're going to relate to that audience, catalyse that audience, and help the publisher. I mean, basically, publishers are looking for, particularly in business, authors who will be able to help propel that book into the world, and often over not just the launch, but months, years to come. The authors are out there speaking about their book, continually selling the book, because actually, you know, the beauty of many of these books are that they stay actually pretty current and pretty fresh, and you know, the long tail can be really, really significant, and you know, much more than other areas of publishing. But again, that's about the author and what they're doing and how the book relates to what they're doing. So if they're doing a lot of speaking and they're always able to push and sell the book on the, you know, in live events, then that's a big feather in their cap for the publisher.
Right. So, Georgina, the idea of a sort of reclusive business book author is probably a non-starter. Would that be right?
Yeah, it's definitely a non-starter. I mean, one of the things I was thinking when Joel was talking was I published non-fiction very broadly, and one of the things that I work with non-fiction writers generally on is sort of helping them to see their area of expertise, but actually almost your area of expertise might be something that you take for granted, that you see as almost slightly boring because you know it so well. But actually, people in the outside world don't understand it, and that's what's really fascinating. And so I guess that's where sort of broadening out the sphere of the people that you're talking to is really helpful, because other people can say, no, that, you know, I want to know about that, and it just feels obvious to you. So, yeah, I think this is where having an agent is a really good thing.
Yes, so you've segued nicely into what I was just about to ask, because it's a question that comes up whenever we do this type of masterclass, which is whether you need an agent or not. The publishers tend to say,
I think,
usually,
yeah.
Well, you don't necessarily need one. An agent's, of course, say you always need an agent. So
I'd say
I'll give Georgina
in business books, you definitely need an agent.
Right.
Because I think it's sort of having that steer towards a very specific market which the agent would know. And, you know, obviously you know, the author knows about their own subject, but then the agent knows about the market and book publishers.
Okay, Jonathan?
Well, I would agree with that.
That's strange.
Yes, absolutely. It's there are certain books that probably don't need an agent, which are very specific and maybe niche and more academically written. But if you're writing a book that could be published by one of the general trade bigger publishers, then I think an agent can help in a number of ways. Articulating the thesis and the creative work on the proposal, but also commercially, your job as an agent is to get your author the best terms. It seems appropriate for business books that someone writing a business book would recognize that and know that certainly in an auction process where a lot of book deals happen, as an agent you're able to bring in more people that might be interested in the book. If you then have more people bidding for it, you'll get your author better terms, not just in the author's home market, but also internationally. So you have a network of international agents that you might work with that are selling the book around the world. And that's all stuff really the author doesn't need to be thinking about. You want the author to have a creative relationship with his or her publisher, not having to make the phone calls chasing money or arguing about specific royalty rates. And so you act really as a buffer as well, so that the author can focus on writing the book and then promoting it. The other stuff an agent really should take care of.
And how would a new author go about finding the right agent? Because you're saying the agent would find the right publisher, but you'd have to find the right agent as well.
Yeah, well, actually, I mean, it works in different ways. You have unsolicited submissions to agencies. My agency, I don't read unsolicited proposals. Certainly in nonfiction, the author typically needs a profile. So for a business book, it might be an academic or a journalist or someone with a successful blog or social media profile. As an agent, I might then approach them to say, have you thought about writing a book? And that happens quite frequently. Or you know quite quickly if someone has that potential to write something. So it is hard for an author without an existing profile in this space, as Joel was saying, to find an agent. But there are certainly lots of agencies out there that welcome unsolicited proposals, and they'll read them, and who knows?
Joel, I think I remember from previous years that you've said you do actually not mind getting proposals direct.
Yeah, I don't mind. I mean, I think, you know, John is absolutely right that agents can bring an enormous amount to the table, and if an author's, you know, I'm not sure, they should definitely talk to agents as well. I mean, I think in terms of business books, we do do a number of books direct with authors, just because either we've come up with the idea and approach people, or I've been introduced to someone via, you know, an event or a relationship, and actually the fit has been so good, and as we've kind of honoured standard terms in the contract, and it's just seemed pretty straightforward. But yeah, if there's I think if you're wondering about whether to, the answer is yes, because
right.
In those other circumstances it wouldn't come up in the same way, if you see what I mean.
Right. And I mean, this is jumping the gun a bit, but I'm interested to know what a new business book author should expect, if anything, in the way of an advance. Now, this is a question that a couple of years ago, I know that our winner last year, Maren Gull, was told by previous winners and finalists, well, don't raise your hopes too high. And then he seemed to go out and get six figures from advances from all around the world. So he set the bar rather high for anyone in subsequent years. But, I mean, Joel, what would be the... What kind of discussion is that? Because it's not something anyone knows about who hasn't been through the publishing mill.
Yeah, and there's just an enormous range, ranging from, you know, in some cases zero advance, where that's not important. It sounds strange, but actually, you know, we've done one today where it's no advance because the author is running a business, doesn't actually need the cash up front. But the great thing about books is that on every copy sold, they'll get a royalty, and it's a very kind of honest and transparent business. So, but you know, where you know individual authors are concerned, who you know the traditional model is that the advance would fund their research and fund the process of writing or contribute to sustaining for that period. And that for business books, obviously the US is the giant market, and so it would depend hugely on whether your book appealed and had a resonance and had an audience there and could find a publisher there, because potentially if it had a big traction in the US, you could be looking at six figures straight up front just on the US side. But typically for the UK, it can range from anywhere from £5,000 to £50,000. I would say that's the kind of bracket, but there's a huge variation, right, even within that. I would just encourage people. I mean, it's easy for me to say this as a publisher, but not necessarily to focus on that number, to focus on finding first of all the right publisher for them and where the fit's right, and then focusing on the long-term success of the book, because everyone benefits when the advance becomes irrelevant over the long term, because it's a partnership and we all want that. So
do you find yourself, Jonathan, negotiating advances? Is that's part of what the agent does, presumably?
That is. It's a pretty big part of the process. When you're in a position to do that, which is in an auction situation, so you've got more than one person bidding. But I agree with what Joel was saying, that actually it's important to have a long-term view. You want the book to be successful. You want the publisher to not have made a huge loss publishing it, so that certainly in an area like business, where you hope an author will write more than one book, that long-term future is secured. And book payments from books come in two forms. You've got the advance, but you've also got royalties. So if a book sells really well and sells for a number of years, then the author will benefit from that through royalty payments that can last for many years.
Right. Georgina, on a different topic, what are the areas where you think business books now, where there's a gap? Are there areas or topics or subjects that you think new business books should be trying to explore? I see most of the business books in the world, it seems, land on my desk one way or the other.
I think you might be more of an expert. I mean, I guess in a way, because I publish nonfiction quite widely, smart thinking books are where sort of what really interests me.
Yes, that is kind of the hot area of the bookstore, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think that's the thing where I think business people, but also people generally, want to read. And actually, there's that kind of almost like finding an affinity. It's like finding a book that clicks. So, I mean, for instance, a book like Reconomics worked across a lot of different spheres. I don't know. Sorry, but to turn the question back to you, because I feel like you've probably got more expertise. I mean, what are you disappointed by?
So I see a lot of waves of books. So, for example, a couple of years ago, it was robots and automation, and there are still a lot of those. And then there was a sort of follow-up wave, almost a sort of counter wave of books which had human in the title and humans and how humanity was going to stay as part of business. And there's very clear... I've seen a very clear sort of surge of books about purpose in business. In mm-hmm. fact, that in a way has become a little bit overblown. Mm-hmm. And then the other part, this may be just a personal sense that where a lot of books have appeared and where I sort of roll my eyes a little now when I get them, are the books that start with the smart thinking, mm-hmm. behavioural science nudge type approach, where you're going to read about new research, you're going to hear about how the New York Knicks managed mm-hmm. to win six straight titles or whatever, and then they follow that sort of fairly standard format. So those are the areas that where I've seen kind of waves of books.
For me, I published a book with Garry Kasparov a couple of years ago that was about AI, and he was asked a question in one of his events where people were saying how they were basically talking about the classroom and saying that the classroom hadn't changed in the last 400 years, and that, you know, we're kind of going into this world that is changing fundamentally, but we're teaching our children in exactly the same way that we have for the last 400, and almost like how would we would change things. So without thinking, how do you turn classrooms into boardrooms? But it's almost like thinking, are we giving children the right skills to grow up and be successful business people?
Right.
So I guess in a way, that seemed to me to be a gap, and it's, you know, not putting them in suits, but it's that idea of almost thinking about what are the right sort of problem-solving mindsets that we could help children have.
Yes. Jonathan, any areas that you see that are unexplored in business books or areas that are ripe for exploration?
Well, it's interesting because the winner of the award last night was right in his speech spoke about how...
Of the Business Book of the Year award.
Yeah, sorry. This is a book that took certainly a couple of years to write, and so it's not something that's opportunistic. It's not saying, well, this book has done well and we're going to try and copy it or do something pretty similar. And there is a temptation to do that. But it's hard to kind of chase those trends because as you were saying, very quickly it's, oh, not another one of these. And the trick is to try and do something original that captures the zeitgeist rather than follows it.
Right.
And if there were a formula for that, that would be great. But it's really dependent on that alchemy of author and subject. And as an agent, you have to be aware of how a book can generate publicity. So you're thinking about what's going on and how the subject will be relevant, but it has to be relevant a year from now or 2 years from now when the book's actually been written.
Right. I'm going to open it to the finalists who are in the room now. If you've heard sort of scribbling in the background, it's because they've all been taking assiduous notes about everything that they've heard. But I'll give Andrew Leon Hanna, the winner of the Bracken Bauer Prize, the first chance to pose a question, if you'd like to any of the panel. Go ahead.
Sure. This is to anyone, but Georgina, you mentioned one thing that distinguishes books that are inspiring or captivating or maybe game-changing, whatever it may be, is that it takes something that one might have taken for granted and kind of turns it on its head. Mm-hmm. Curious for all of the folks sharing, what are, you know, as you kind of reflect on the books you've read, what are like certain elements or features like what you mentioned, Georgina, that takes a book from, it could have been, you know, it was good or it was solid, to this was sort of transformative, this really inspired a lot of people, this captivated people, changed their hearts and minds and stuck with them.
The example that springs to mind is not a business book, but have you read Why We Sleep? That was a book that came out last year. And that's a popular science book, but it's just that idea of sort of taking something that we all do, that we all worry, mm-hmm. that we don't approach it in the right way, and then showing us that we're not approaching it in the right way, and actually they're, you know, kind of giving chapter and verse about the things, you know, it's taking something that we thought we knew a little bit about and then realizing that we don't necessarily know. I'm not sure. Joel, do you have, because I was just thinking in terms of business books, it's probably not a helpful example for me.
Piyumi, do you have a question for any of our team?
Yes. So this is something even Andrew and I were talking about, and I think Joel and Jonathan, you touched upon it as well, the importance of an author's platform and lack thereof. So I'm curious about, you know, what a competition like the Bracken Bauer Prize would mean in terms of elevating a new author. And what does that mean to an agent like yourself, Jonathan? And what does that mean to publishers as well? To what extent does this elevate an author's profile and put them on your radar?
Well, to a really significant extent. It's a great, I think, initiative to have this award. It's hard to find ways of having that kind of external validation from people that have read it and experts in the industry. So awards they're very important for readers. There are all sorts of awards throughout the year, which is just a way for a reader to understand, okay, right, I can kind of place this, I understand that other people have kind of recommended this and like it. So an award like this, when it is hard to get that break, is really significant. And certainly if I received an email from someone saying I was shortlisted for this award, maybe there's a quote from one of the judges that might be specific to the proposal, it would make me immediately take notice of it. Endorsements are important for book proposals. Obviously, not all book proposals have them, but quite often, whether it's a chef and you get a well-known chef to endorse it, if it's a business writer, you get a well-known journalist or academic, that can be a really helpful way of just demonstrating, okay, there's this author's career is moving in a positive direction.
Christian, do you have a question?
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you for taking the time, by the way. It's a pleasure to be here. And I was wondering about the kind of unknown unknowns. So what are the things that we, in a way, are not yet experienced enough to actually ask you, but what seems to always surprise young authors when they go out there and they fall on their nose and they have to learn it the hard way? Is there something that surprises young authors but doesn't surprise you anymore?
Yeah, the writing the book is about 25% of the work. Maybe 20%. But the moment, one, it can feel like once you've gone through the editorial process, and that can be in itself a whole journey with many dark nights of the soul, and you've been through the editing and everything, you've got the book, you can, I'm done. And actually, especially in business books, that's just the start. And talking about the book, telling the world about the book, is an enormous part of the task. And the authors that succeed tend to kind of be pretty relentless. Mm. and charmingly shameless as well. I mean, to your question about sort of platform, I think there's a lot of focus on the platform in the sense of authors somehow feel they have to have a mailing list of 1 million people and 10 million followers on Twitter, but actually that's usually not realistic. What is more realistic and can be more effective is using others' platforms. So one thing I'd kind of advise is building influential friends and friends of friends and connections along the whole journey of the writing, so that you're seeding relationships, you're starting networks, and involving the more people. Don't squirrel yourself away and hide everything. Share bits of the book, share ideas, bring people in, win people over, and a lot of it is influence and inspiring people to do things for you and for the book. All the way through, but particularly on publication and after that, because if you can connect to and harness some people that do have multi-million followings, they can bring their audience to you and the book, and that's doing an enormous amount of the work for you in some way.
That seems like a good moment on which to wind up the podcast, because we are out of time, and I know the three finalists here have still got Dark Nights of the Soul to come in progressing their proposals, so we wish them lots of luck. If you want to read more about the Brackenbauer Prize, and indeed read extracts from the winning and two finalist proposals, go to ft.com/Brackenbauer. Thank you to our panellists today, and stay tuned for more about the 2019 Brackenbauer Prize next year.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The latest episode of The Next Five podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vidari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of The Next Five wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.